today's shiur is sort of a loose end connection. What I want to do is, I've kind of been pushing off to the very last piece, is a kind of parenthetical subunit, if you will, on the identity of David HaMelech, or the description of David. This very powerful description in four words, Admonim Yefei Naim, which we're going to look at again and translate and to try to understand and explore. That's our agenda for today. Whatever we finish, we finish. Whatever we don't finish, by next week, we begin chapter 17, David and Goliath or Goliath. So we will. So let's go back to where we were. And Perek Tet Zayin 16, verse 12. Pasuk Yud Bet.
And this one is 344.
384.
Wait. Did you say
Perek Tet Zayin? Perek Tet Zayin Pasuk Yud Bet. Should be the same page in both of those. Perek Tet Zayin, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tet Zayin.
Sorry, I'm in the right place. It's 344. I'm looking at it. I'm saying it says Perek Tet Zayin, and I'm looking at it.
It's okay. It's all good. Veishlach. Right. If you remember the scene, Shmuel is in the house of Yishai, or gathered with Yishai and his sons. He's there to designate the next person who would be the king to take over for Shaul. He says to Yishai, it must be one of your sons. He comes to the first one. He says, oh, this one's very tall, very strong, very must be appropriate. God says to him, no. Then he goes to the next one, says the next one, and finally comes, finishes all the sons, and he says, don't you have anybody left? He says, yeah, I got one more left. He's out in the back with the flock, with the sheep. He says, bring him. He brings him, and Shmuel lays eyes on him, sees him. He brings him. He comes. He is Admoni, which we're going to translate in a moment. That's a lot easier to translate, although not necessarily easier to understand. Yefe Inayim means
beautiful eyes.
Okay.
What are ugly eyes?
Good question. V'tov ro'i.
A nice appearance.
Nice appearance, right. So it's handsome. V'yomer Hashem kum shecheyu kizehu. And God says to him, come, anoint him, this is the one. And there are a multitude of questions that this phrase creates. First of all, what is Admoni?
It could be somebody from Admon.
Admon is what's Admon?
I don't know, but it could be a place.
It could be. It's unlikely, considering the rest of this is describing Yefeinayim Tovoi. He's from Bethlehem. Unlikely that it's a place. There is a nation called Edom, but that's because the first one to be described as Edom, or Edom is a grandson of Esav, and so his descendants are from Edom. Right. But David is not going to be described in that regard. No, Admoni comes from the word Adom, or Adom, which means red. It can also be Adama, which is earth. But earth and red are actually from the same source, because mud is a kind of a reddish color. So Adama and Adom, the color, come from the same root. Okay, the color is Adom, because it looks like earth, it looks like dirt, and it has that kind of rusty reddish complexion. That's what the color Adom is in Tanakh. So the question is, why is David called Admoni? What's red about him?
Could it not mean earthy?
Well, that's the question. So there are those who suggest that it's a description of his hair color. His hair color is red, his eyes are beautiful, Admoni, Yefei Naim. Very nice. The problem with that definition is if you take a look at source on the page that I just gave you, if you take a look at source 3. Source 3 is a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Now, Shir HaShirim is out of context for us. Like, why I suddenly throw Shir HaShirim in there? But Shir HaShirim, with all of its complexity and difficulty to understand, it's a metaphor on some level for the relationship between God and Israel. But the story to Shir HaShirim is a description of two individuals, a man and a woman chasing each after each other. One is called the Dod, and the other is called the Re'ah, or the friend, or the beloved. It's interesting irony. This the male in the story is at one time called, and many times called, Dod, and in other times he's called Shlomo. Which is an interesting irony, because Dod is spelled Dalid Vav Dalid, which is the same spelling as David. So there's a whole level of understanding of Shir HaShirim that challenges the relationship between God and Israel, places the metaphor along the lines of the difference or the distinction between the relationship between God and Israel during the time of David and the relationship between the time of Shlomo. That David and Shlomo become kind of the paradigms of two different examples or expressions of that relationship.
Who wrote Shir HaShirim? Shlomo?
Shlomo. Which is a subject in studying to itself. It's what exactly is David and Shlomo doing in the story of Shir HaShirim when it's a metaphor for the relationship between God and Israel. But clearly, it's not an accident that the names are there, Dod and Shlomo. Melech Shah Shalom Shaloch, Chazal says, both referring to God in some level. But the Dod, or the beloved, is described as, or they're both described in various different psukim, each one of them describes the other. And so in this description of the Dod, says the pasuk in source 3, Dodi Tzach Ve'adom Dagul Mirvava. My beloved is Tzach, which is a word that needs to be understood too, but not for us right now. It's not of relevance. It's pure or simple or flowing. The Adom. Adom means red. So assuming it's the same word, and assuming therefore it's a description of his hair, we would have a problem with the next verse. Rosho ketem paz, his head is golden. Kvutzotav taltalim shchorot, with beautiful black curly hair.
That doesn't work.
So black hair and redhead doesn't work. Right? Well, that's highlights, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Right. So therefore, so therefore, while the Radak seem, while there are mefarshim who suggest that Admoni means a reflection of his color of his hair, there are others who suggest that it's a function of his complexion, that his skin is reddish in color.
So it's rosy cheeks.
Rosy, ruddy, as it translates here, the color in the cheeks. Now, all of this is remarkable because the last person in Tanakh to be described thus, Admoni, is Esau. And that's source number one. Vayetze Harishon Admoni, in describing, it's actually this week's parasha, in describing Yaakov and Esav and the birth of each one, Vayetze Harishon Admoni, Kulo Ke'aderet Se'ar, Vayikrushmo Esav. The first one born was Admoni, hence his grandson is called Edom. Kulo Ke'aderet Se'ar, hairy, covered in hair, and was named Esav, from the word asui, meaning complete, already sort of adultish in his look because he was already born with so much hair. So the question of what Admoni there means, because you could theoretically describe it as a description of his hair, but it's more likely, or that you said you could theoretically describe it as a reflection of his face or his complexion, but there the subject is talking about his hair. Admoni kolo kaderet seyar. So again, I have two approaches in the Mefarshim to how to understand Admoni. Some say it's a reflection of hair color, others say it's a a skin coloring or reddish complexion, if you will. Either way, what it does is it sets up a remarkable and really extraordinary parallel.
Why do we need all those descriptions?
Well,
one person like that.
Well, I actually, it's a description of two people, and that's what's so extraordinary. Right? It's a description of Esav and David.
Well, I was only talking about Esav.
But isn't, right. isn't that description of Esav?
You don't
isn't
know
that,
that Yaakov didn't look like Esav because they were twins.
No, Yaakov is born, says very clearly that he was very different.
But that doesn't mean he looked different. Is never do they don't
yes.
describe how he
was. Isn't the Admoni often interpreted as a reflection of his inner character?
So we'll get there in a moment. But at least on
not,
the
not a very favorable character.
Well, so that's what we're gonna get to that in a moment. We're gonna get to all of that in a moment. But on the face of it, it's certainly in these two psukim a description of a physical characteristic. Because he's looking at him. Admoni, Yefei Nai, V'tov Ro'i. So he's red. Beautiful eyes, good, handsome looking. Then I have this break in the middle of the pasuk, which requires some explanation. And then God says to him, anoint. God says to Shmuel, anoint. I have a similar description by Esav, Admoni kulo kader tzeah, when he's born. And what's interesting is that if you look in source 2, and in source 2 I have to explain, it's a quote from the commentary called the Balaturim, but the Balaturim is really quoting a another source. And the source that it quotes is called the Masoret. Now, the Masoret comes from the word tradition, but if you look in a Mikra, I didn't actually photocopy it for you, I should have. If you look in the Mikra Gdolot, the old classic texts of the of Chumash and Mikra Gdolot, they often have in the margin and the gloss very cryptic short phrases that are designed to highlight unique words or phrases that only appear once, twice, three times in Chumash and sort of connect the dots. So in that gloss on Chumash in Breishit, it says, on the word Admoni, Bet Bamasoret. It has the letter literally bet. That's all it says. The Masoret has the letter bet in the gloss on this word. Why? To tell me that there are only two places in all of Tanakh where the word appears. One, Vayetzer Rishon Admoni, referring to the birth of Esav. Two, V'hu Admoni Miyefeh Enayim Kabe David. So it's not just the fact that they're both described as Admoni, it's the fact that the term appears in only two places in all of Tanakh, specifically about Esav and David, and that's really extraordinary. Beyond the question of why I need the lengthy description and why is his physical appearance so significant, but it does set up a fascinating equation between two individuals whom probably assume that we would have placed on opposite ends of the picture of their role in Jewish life and in Tanakh, David HaMelech and Esav HaRasha. Couldn't get more extremes than that. So on what basis do we connect these two descriptions, two individuals? Now go one step further. The fact that that David is described as Admoni im Yefei Naim, the Tov Ro'i, if it was just the description here, I could say, okay, it's maybe we could gloss over it. Maybe we could say it's insignificant, that it just happens to be the use of a description or a term. However, if you turn to Perek Yud Zayin for a moment, I'll show you something very interesting. Perek Yud Zayin, which is the story of David and Goliath. I'll tell you in a minute. Yeah, If you look in Perek et Zion, Pasuk Lamed Tet Mem, we're going to study this Perek at length, but for now, just this first moment where David approaches Goliath in the middle of the battle. ויחגור דוד את חרבו מעל מדב. 1739, chapter 17, verse 39. Yud Zion Lamed Tet. David took his sword over his uniform. Let's skip Lamed Tet.
It's
42. We'll get there. Let's start with Mem. ויקח מקלו בידו. 40. ויקח מקלו בידו. He took his staff. ויבחר לו חמישה חלקי אבנים מן הנחל. He took five smooth stones out of the river. וישם אותם בכלי הרועים שלו. He put them into his pocket. וקלו בידו. And he had his stick in his hand. ויגש אל הפלישתי. And he approached the Philistine. וילך הפלישתי הולך וקרב אל דוד. Plishti, this Philistine, the Goliath, started to come closer, approach David. Ve'ish noseh hatzina lefanav, the man carrying his spear before him. Ve'abet haplishti, this Philistine took one look at David. Ve'yireh David, he saw him. Ve'yivzeu, he disparaged him, belittled him. He was despised. Why? Disregarded him. Ki haya na'ar ve'admoni im yefeh ma'eh. So, whatever this admoni means, it plays an interesting role. Because a chapter later, David is going to approach Goliath. Goliath's going to look at him and not take him seriously. Why? Because he's admoni im yefeh ma'eh. Very handsome. And admoni. And you kind of like, the wonder. That's the description of David in chapter 16. That's the description of David in chapter 17. And it certainly plays a role in the story there. The rest of the story we'll leave for now. What is the significance of calling David Admoni? With the eyes and the appearance, im yefe naim v'tov im yefe einayim v'tov ru'i. So that's the question. That's what the question of the Mefarshim struggle with. So we're going to kind of delve into the Mefarshim a little bit today to try to understand how they address what they do with this description of David and the link to Esav, which is in itself extraordinary. You have a question?
No, I was just thinking that pink is youth.
Youthfulness, maybe.
It says
Nar Admoni. Nar certainly means young.
Yeah.
Admoni could be. Yeah, Esav is called Admoni when he's born. Mm-hmm. Possible. Except by Shir Hashirim, it's a description of David Tzach ve'Adom, and that's not a description, but could be. So first of all, let's start with this reference in the story of Goliath, because the Radak is a very interesting take on that description. So let's start with source 4. Admonim yefeh mar'eh. Kvar pirashnu, Radak is referring to his earlier parish on our pasuk, but we'll start from here. Shehu kumo v'yefeh. Admoni is a euphemism or another description of his handsomeness. It's a way of describing him as handsome. V'ine lo bizalto bavur kira'ot oto shaya na'a. Goliath didn't disparage him, didn't dismiss him because he was young. Young isn't necessarily a reason to not take seriously a warrior. Elo, lama bizalto, why did he despise him, why did he disparage him? Bavur shaya admonim yefeh mar'eh, because he was reddish in complexion, and beautiful, handsome. So, what's the connection? Says the Radak, lefi shechashav bilibo. He's kind of conjecturing now what's going through the mind of Goliath, which is a hard thing to figure out. But nonetheless, ki lo yitachen Sheye ish milchama. Not possible for this David to be a man of war.
Probably scars and beat up.
Right. Ki mi sheyad agil etzet l'milchama. Somebody who's a warrior by training and trade. Lo ya'amod bo yofyo. His beauty is not going to stand the test of time. Yipnei ha'yigiya v'yatorech v'yoto b'chutz b'yitot milchama l'kerach u'l'matar u'l'sharav. He's outside, he's in war, he's dealing with weather and the challenges of weather and the cold and the heat and the rain and the wind and the chamsin and everything else that comes with being an outsidesman. And so to be young and to be have beautiful complexion and beautiful skin and be handsome and good looking and to be a warrior doesn't go together. Now I'm not sure how much discrimination and generalization there is in that description, but nonetheless, the assumption is that Goliath looks at him and he says, "This admonim im yefe mareh, this handsome young man, is not a warrior, and I don't need to take him seriously.
He's inexperienced."
Right. On the other hand, and I said that Radak makes a lot of sense in the context of the story of Goliath. On the other hand, by Esav, that description doesn't work. Why?
Because he's the outdoorsman, athlete,
right.
Hunter.
Because the whole purpose of describing Esav as Admoni is as a prelude to understanding the character of Esav. The whole notion of describing the birth of Yaakov and Esav, it's actually this week's parsha, so it's a really good segue, and you can use this as a Dvar Torah on the Shabbos table. Right? Just happens to work. If you beginning of Parsha Toldo, which is Bereishit chapter
25.
An old description here, Pasuk Chaf Hei, 25:25. Perek Chaf Hei, Pasuk Chaf Hei. Beginning of Parsha Toldot. The first one emerged at the birth of twins, Yaakov and Esav. The first one emerged reddish, ruddy, covered in hair. Vayikrushmo Esav. They called him Esav from the word asui, ready made, done, fully baked. Vayachrechen yatsa achiv viyado chesed ba'kev Esav. Vayikrushmo Yaakov. His brother was born. He's holding on to his brother's heel. They called him Yaakov. And then, next pasuk, pasuk of Zayin, Veigdlu anarim, as they grew, Vehi Esav, Ish, Yodet Said, Ish Sadev, Yaakov, Ish Tam, Yoshev Olim. They took up different professions, each one followed in the footsteps of their personality. Esav became a hunter, and Yaakov became now, careful. Because we tend to translate Yoshev O'alim as a scholar. Okay, and that's a rabbinic translation. It's based on the Medrash and the Gemara. The pshat of the word Yoshev O'alim is he's a shepherd.
Oh.
Okay? Because in the beginning of Bereishit, actually in Parshat Bereishit, where it describes the grandchildren and the generations of Adam and Chava and their descendants, it talks about the beginning of various professions, and there it says, "Vatosev leledet tachiv et Havel, vahi." Sorry, that's not what I'm looking for. It's not Cain and Havel. Cain, he was a Edson. Cain was a. Oved Adama, but that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the next parak, where it says, I'll tell you, you don't have to turn. I'm just going to read the pasuk. Sorry, I had it there for a minute. So the pasuk talks about the different professions, different trades that started to develop. One was a one developed music, and the other was developed the ability to build. What chapter?
20, chapter 4,
verse 20. That's it. Thank you. Vatelet adat yaval, hu haya avi yoshev ohel umikne. He was the beginning of those, the father of those who dwell in tents with cattle, with sheep, with flock. Yoshev ohel umikne. So yoshev ohel is a term, is a biblical term for a shepherd. Partially because it doesn't describe, I mean, they were rotzen, they were etzen, they were shepherds, but the description of Yoshev Ohel is a description for somebody who is a shepherd. Why? What's the connection? The connection is very easy. It's very simple. Where does a shepherd live?
In a tent.
In a tent, because he's nomadic, right? He has to go with his flock, so to live in a tent means, right, rather than to live in the field and to be a hunter and to live in the field, a shepherd tends to his flock and lives in a tent. So Yoshev Ohel is in the contrast to Ish Sadeh. The man of the field is a man who hunts. And Yoshev Ohel sits in a tent, lives in a tent, is a person who tends to his flock. It's a term in Sefer Bereishit that has very specific professional contexts. So the description in the context of Yaakov and Esav could not be more contrasting. Esav is described as Yodei Tzayid, Ish Sadeh, is a person who's out in the field. V'hi Esav, Ish Yodei Tzayid, Ish Sadeh, he's a man who knows how to hunt, who's a hunter for his living, for his livelihood, a man of the field, Ish Sadeh. Yaakov is a shepherd, and therefore Yoshev Olim. So one kills for livestock for a living, and the other
raises,
preserves, raises, and protects them for a living. You could not have two more.
Ultimately, they were going to be eaten. Or
necessarily. Flock had many purposes other than to be eaten. For clothing, for wool, for milk, for... Right? On the contrary, shepherds generally weren't raising... to kill. It was a different profession, different world.
But where did everybody else live? Did they have houses?
No, but the concept of I don't know where everybody else lived, but the term is used in very specific contexts. It's clear. It's very specific. Yoshev Oel Umikne in the contrast to Ish Sadeh. It's not a describing of the way people live in houses. It's describing the professional world in which they function. So the Esav is described as admoni, as a link to his being a hunter. Right? That's the character that ultimately leads him to become a hunter. And Yaakov is described as an ish yoshev or lemikneh. So I'm left with the mystery of David. Where is the admoni in the character of David HaMelech? So here I want to take you through a journey of a remarkable set of sources in the Midrash that ultimately come back to David. And they need to be understood in context. So let's take a look. Let's start with source 5. This is a Midrash on... there's a space missing, but it's Bereishit Rabbah. It's a Midrash Rabbah on Bereishit. On the birth of Esav. The Medrash there says the following. Admoni. Everybody see where I am?
Mm-hmm.
Admoni is translated as ready. Amen of Abba bar Kahana. I gave you the translation of this Medrash also. Amen of Abba bar Kahana. Ki'ilu shofech damim. Red in complexion, as if he was a spiller of blood.
All now, from somebody's complexion?
We'll come to the explanation of it. I want to first understand it. And that, says the Medrash, links us back to Shmuel. Because remember, in our verse, there's this pause in the middle of the pasuk. There's a break in the middle of the pasuk. Usually you have paragraph breaks between sections. Here you have a paragraph break in the middle of a pasuk. He brought him, saw that he was Admoni, im yafei naim v'tov ro'i, pause, break, in the middle of the verse. God said to Shmuel, kum mshecheu, anoint him, for that's the one. What a break in the middle of a verse is very rare. You have a few places in Tanakh where you have a break, a paragraph break in the middle of a verse. But it's very rare. And it usually indicates some kind of significant moment. Pause, contemplation, shift. Says the Medrash, kivan shera'ah Shmuel et David admoni, the moment Shmuel saw David, we're talking about this Medrash is on the birth of Esav. But again, not to escape the fact that they're connected, the Medrash says, when Shmuel saw David and saw that David was Admoni, as it says, Vayishlach v'yevyehu hu Admoni, nityareh, he got scared. V'yamar, he said, Avzeh shofech damim ke'esav. What is this? I got another Esav on my hands. This one's also going to be a spiller of blood like Esav. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered him and said, Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with one significant difference. Im yefeh einayim. With beautiful eyes. So again, if we take the phrase Admoni, and the phrase, not just as a literal or physical description, but as an insight into a deeper personality, if that's the direction the Medrash wants to go, then I have to do the same with yefeh einayim. Because it's one phrase. So if Admonim, Yefei Naim, red with beautiful eyes, is a description not only of the physical characteristic, but of a character trait, I get Admoni, what is Yefei Naim? Says the Medrash. Esav midat atzmohu horeg, ze midat Sanhedrin hu horeg. Esav would kill without rhyme or reason. He was a hunter. He was a hunter by trade. Whereas David is also a redhead in that sense, reddish complexion in that sense. He's also shofech damim, but midat Sanhedrin, with the authorization of the rabbinic court, with the authorization of the Sanhedrin. Now, where did we get to Sanhedrin? So this is just a sidebar. How did we jump to the Sanhedrin in the story? How did we get from Yefei Naim to with the authorization of the court?
There isn't a court then.
Right, there isn't a court. Well, there is in the time of David. Right, there is a check. There is a system of checks and balances. There is a Sanhedrin, or an equivalent of some kind of legal structure of shoftim that exists from the time the Torah sets the mandate. Shoftim v'shoftim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha. But what's the significance here? So the word einayim, the Medrash is playing off the word eyes, and You have to jump to the next pasuk, which is source 6. There, I just gave you the basis for why we jumped to the Sanhedrin. The pasuk there talks about a kind of korban. There are different kinds of sin offerings that are brought that the Torah defines, and one of them is a sin offering brought by some for an error in judgment made by the court, by the leaders. And there the pasuk says, "V'im kol adat Yisrael yishku." If all of Israel should make a mistake, because they were so instructed by the court, "V'ne'elam davar me'enei kahal," and the matter be hidden or not seen by the eyes of the congregation. Who are the eyes of the congregation? So Chazal say, the eyes of the congregation are the Sanhedrin. This is a reference to a korban brought for a mistake offered by, in judgment made by the court or the Sanhedrin. You also have another example where Moshe says to Lavan, not Lavan, where Moshe says to Yitro, his father-in-law, as he's about to leave, right, wrong father, as he's about to leave Har Sinai and head to the land of Israel, and Yitro makes waves that he wants to go home. And Moshe says to him, no, you don't leave us. Come with us. You know the way. Ve'yita lanu le'enayim. You will be our eyes. Or another reference is in the Navi's Hadith. I didn't put it on the source page because they just didn't occur to me at the time, but there's another reference in Sefer Zechariah where it talks about the branches of the sun, of the menorah, the famous vision of the menorah with the Beit HaMikdash. And there also Zechariah describes the menorah symbolizing the leadership of Israel and the wisdom of Israel and the two branches of the leadership, the king and the kohen. And there too he talks about the einayim, mishototot b'chol ha'aretz, the eyes that go through the land and that look after all of the affairs of the land. All of these are connected to the same idea, that einayim refers not only to the eyes of an individual, but also the eyes of a community leader in that regard, or the zkenim. And so essentially what the Medrash is suggesting is that whereas Esav is motivated and driven by the impulse of Admoni, in the case of David, it's tempered. It's Admoni, but im yifei einayim, with the ability of, with the characteristic of discernment, to be able to distinguish between the right time and the wrong time, as if you had the Sanhedrin determining that principle, when to go to war, when not to go to war. It's the same principle, it's the same idea. Yifei einayim, balanced. And that's, as the Medrash is ultimately where God said to Shmuel, this one is different than Esav. So you have, they share the characteristic of Admoni. Where they differ is what makes David unique, namely the einayim, the eyes, the temper, and the eyes of discernment, the temper that
impulse.
That impulse.
So it's sort of like Shoftim, where it says everybody did what was right in their own eyes. So that's like Esav. And David does.
Right. What is the right in the eyes of the Sanhedrin, if you will, right, to borrow that metaphor. Very correct.
But David could decide for himself if it was a time to kill somebody.
Yes, but because he had the authority of the king, but it's not a literal translation. It's not saying that he had a Sanhedrin, he had a court, and he worked with the court, but the kreti pleti, whatever, we'll talk about it. But the balance and the measured context is described here as with the authorization of the Sanhedrin. In Hilchas Malachim, the Rambam says that a king can go to war only if he has the authorization of the court. It's borrowing from a halachic structure. But yes, in the context of David HaMelech, that would make... And that would be appropriate.
Is yifei einayim usually used for a male?
You can see it here.
Well, I obviously see it here. But
it's a way of describing this somebody who's, well, again, so if it literally would describe somebody as handsome, figuratively or metaphorically, it's describing a characteristic,
right,
parallel to the characteristic of Admoni, or in opposition to. Take a look at Source 7. Now, Source 7... again, same idea. We're going to kind of shift balance between these two references. Another medrash, Midrash HaGadol, Admoni, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Im ra'ita adam shepanav adumim. If you see somebody who has, and here you see clearly that the medrash picked it up as not a color of hair, but a color of complexion. Panav adumim, his face is red. Then you can assume one of two things. This is, again, a little bit an overgeneralization, but certainly in concept. Or Rasha Gamur Ke Esav. He's either a Rasha like Esav, or Sadiq Gamur Ke David. Or he could be a righteous person like David, which basically says, can't tell anything from complexion, but the extremes are there. The parallel is there. Be'esav ma'omer ve'yetzer rishon admoni kolo kader tzayar, be'david ma'omer admonim yifei einayim. Again, a host of midrashim that link these two to see the contrast. And Dafka to pick up on that contrast and say, you're right, they share something in common, but how far apart are they? Esav is a spiller of blood. Was David a spiller of blood? Yes. Ultimately, in Divrei Hayamim, it says that that's why he wasn't allowed to build the Beit HaMikdash. Because of the fact that he had so much, quote, blood on his hands, meaning he was a warrior. But how different is the context in which Esav went to war and which David went to war. And the context is all makes all the difference in the world. Take a look at source 8. Source 8 is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. Now, it's not, this source is not talking about Esav or David. But I want to show you something. But this is really a fascinating piece. The Gemara there is talking about the concept of mazal. Now, what is mazal?
What? Astrology, I guess.
Right. So we call it luck, but really the word mazal tov, which is good luck to you, but or congratulations. But really, the word mazal comes from the mazalot, which are the constellations, and is a reference to the notion of astrology or the impact of the astrological signs of the zodiac on the events of the world, which is why the Gemara says, "Ein mazal Yisrael," that we are not ruled by or under the rubric of the limitations of the astrological influences of the zodiac. We are under direct divine providence of God. Ein mazal Yisrael. Which has always intrigued me that the most un-Jewish expression is to wish somebody mazel tov. It's the most un-Jewish expression because Gemara says clearly, Ein mazal Yisrael. It doesn't mean that we're a people without luck. It means that we are people not governed by the astrological influences of the zodiac and the constellation. So why wish somebody a good constellation? It's a very strange expression. I know at least one person, a rabbi in Israel, who refuses to use the phrase. I once asked him, what does he say to somebody when they have a simcha and you want to wish them congratulations? He said to me, I say to him, Birkat Hashem Alecha, which is God's blessing should be upon you, which is a phrase from Megillat Rut. And makes a lot of sense, but most people just say mazel tov because that's what we do.
You can't really yell that out like at a wedding when somebody steps on the glass. You
know? Have a midrash on mazal, makom is ma'am milim, to be in the right place at the right time and know what to do about it.
Correct. And they have all kinds of, the word mazal has come to mean all kinds of things, and actually the phrase mazal tov comes from the Gemara that describes the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, and says that links David HaMelech, who is the central theme of the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, David HaMelech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim, Simon Tov U'Mazel Tov Yilanu Elochai Yisrael. That phrase comes from Birkat Levana, right? From when we say after Rosh Chodesh, when we bless the new moon. And we say, Simon Tov U'Mazel Tov Yilanu Elochai Yisrael. So there's much to be said. But in the meantime, the Gemara there in Masechet Shabbat talks about the significance of the stars, constellations, what impact do they have? And working off the assumption that they have some impact, the Gemara says the following. Hayman d'bemadim, a person who was born under Mars. Now Mars is a red planet. So if a person is born under Mars, yehi gever ashich dama, he's going to be somebody who's a shedder of blood because he's born under the influence of the red planet. Says Rav Ashi, I umana, I ganva, I tavcha, I moala. He'll either be a surgeon, a thief, a slaughterer, a butcher, or a circumciser. Meaning, you want to shed blood, there are good ways to do it, and there are not good ways to do it. And ultimately, what Rav Ashi is saying is, essentially what Rav Ashi is arguing is against the first statement. The first statement says, you're born under the influence of Mars, you're going to be a shedder of blood, to which Rav Ashi says, that's not a Jewish concept. Jewish concept is that we all have free will. We can all function in a capacity that is within our ability to choose and direct our actions. We may have predetermined or pre-existing tendencies and characteristics. Some people are type A personality, some people are type B personality. That doesn't mean that they don't have the ability to choose the path that they want to go. And that, says Rav Ashi, is ultimately the only takeaway out of that whole astrological description, is that we are creatures of choice and we can choose the path that we want. So you want to shed blood? Isn't that it? You can either be a surgeon, and use it constructively, or a thief and use it destructively. You could be a shochet, or you could be a moel, or you could be both. I know people who are both.
That's interesting.
Yes? It's a whole discussion whether a shochet is allowed to be a moel. It's a halachic discussion. All kinds of tshuvas written in the 16th, 17th century as to whether or not it was permissible for a shochet to be a moel. The basis of it was they were concerned that somebody who is used to holding a knife and making the bracha ala shchita would make the wrong bracha at a bris.
Big whoop.
Yes, that was that's the concern. Otherwise, it's to buy the book.
I'm having another image.
So if you take a look to the Gra, the Eliyahu of Vilna, the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon was known for many things. He was a prolific writer. He wrote scholar. He wrote books in mathematics. He was, of course, Torah scholar. But he also wrote a number of works on Kabbalistic and mystical side of Jewish thought. And in his, he wrote a very powerful and very beautiful commentary on Mishlei. Mishlei contains the verse that says the Gra is the basis of this Gemara. As Mishlei, it says in Source 9, Chanoch lena'ar al pi darko. Educate each child in accordance with their approach. Their derech, their approach. Says the Gra, in Source 10, Va'inyan, ki ha'adam I efsholo lishibor darko. A person can't negate the personality who they are. Every person has a personality. Every person is born with a personality. You can't, it's all nature-nurture debate. There's a certain aspect of who we are that's in the genes. And any parent knows that. There are certain characteristics that our children have that they're just born with. I can tell you all kinds of stories, but we won't go there. Klamar, and that's what the Gemara refers to when it talks about mazalo, the mazal. Mazal shel nolad bo. And then he quotes our Gemara, k'mo shekotov, ha'iman debetzedek yiyeh gevet tzedka, nukshon olav ha'mazal raz. We'll get to that line in a moment. And he quotes our Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, various phrases of it that talk about the characteristic a person will have born under certain constellation signs. Ukeshenolad b'mazal ra, if a person is born in the context of a mazal ra, meaning he has a characteristic which, an energy, a drive, that could be channeled incorrectly, al ze nitna ha-bechira b'yad ha-adam, sheyuchal le'echoz b'mazalo. At that point, says the Gemara, a person is given the choice, the ability, to take his own destiny into his own hands. Le'eze davar sheyirtze. Whatever characteristic, it's not inherently evil or good, it's only a drive. What you do with it is up to you. Linhog liot o tzadik o rasha o benoni. You could be righteous, you could be wicked. You could be average. We don't want to be average. We don't want to be a rasha. Kmo shekatav b'mesechet Shabbat, ha'iman d'v'madim yeshofech tamim amar vashi o mo'al otay b'cholistim. A person who is born under the constellation of Mars will shed blood, says Ravashi. That means that you have to choose the direction. You have a drive, you have an energy, there's an impulse there. You have to channel it correctly. You can take it in the direction of Esav and let that impulse drive you to be a hunter. You could take it in the direction of David and let that impulse drive you to be a great leader of our people. And similarly, he quotes, V'enyan k'mo b'David, v'hu admoni, v'hu b'ma'adam, he was red, meaning he was born under the constellation of Mars, let's say, in the language of the Gemara. V'lechein ta'alav Shmuel be'et ra'ak klaster panav. That's why Shmuel saw him and was afraid, was concerned. He saw this characteristic. And Kadosh Baruch Hu had to say to him, no, on the contrary. Malbim goes, similar approach, goes one step further. Malbim says that David was Admoni, shegavra bo ha'aduma, and he had this characteristic of being red, And therefore, in his characteristic, he was impulse, his drive, his energy, could have driven him to be like Esav. He also had positive characteristics. He had beautiful eyes, v'tovrein, he was handsome, which reflects, shezeh morel, shu chad ha'iyun, that he is contemplative, that he considers, that he's measured, v'tov ha'mezek, and even tempered. If it was up to Shmuel, Shmuel would have looked at him and said, I'm not taking any chances. I'm not taking any chances. But God sees the heart. And he saw, that by David would use this drive in a positive way for mishpat, for justice and righteousness, and that his admimut, his redness, and his characteristic of impulse that is in him, and to Abba, he would use to fight God's battles, to lead the people of Israel. And he would channel it in a way that was constructive for the purpose and for the betterment of the Jewish people. And let me bring this all back to a very simple equation. If you had to define one word, if you had to pick one word that defined David HaMelech, find one word that really defines the character of David from the beginning of his life to his end. L'tov l'ra, for better or for worse. Because in the end, David has his faults too. But David is great despite his faults, or perhaps even greater because of them. So the one word that I would use to describe David, I think, more than anything else, would be a man of passion.
I was thinking that too.
Passion.
That was the word I was thinking about.
Now, passion can be used for great effect and great constructive energy. But passion needs to be channeled. Because if you let passion go unbridled, it can be very destructive. And David knows this. David channels it. David is aware of it. And the few times that he slips and he makes mistakes, and he does, he'll back off. Or he'll come back. Or he'll use that passion for constructive. Fix the mistake and move on kind of characteristic. We'll talk about David and Bathsheba at length. It's about the time we get to Shmuel Bet. But that's the classic example of both the unbridled passion that leads to a terrible mistake and the passion that drives him almost to a fault of an obsessive fault to rectify that mistake. And the loyalty with which he will demonstrate a commitment to it, we just read it in this week's Haftorah, the loyalty with which he will demonstrate a commitment to Bathsheba after the fact, despite all of the price that he pays, both within his family, which leads to the rebellion of Avshalom, and it leads to the rebellion of Adoniyahu, and it leads to the rebellion ultimately in the revolt of his generals, and of his army, and of the people, and of Sheva ben Bichri, and everybody who looks at David in the aftermath of Bathsheba, and the fact that he remains loyal to Bathsheba to the end, as a sign of his weakness and his fault. And the only person who stands by his decision to keep Bathsheba as not only his wife, but his primary wife, is the Navi. And he will abide by the instructions of the Navi that in the aftermath of the chait of Bathsheba, he now owes it to Bathsheba to keep her as his wife, because the alternative is to throw her back onto the street. And the moral crime that would have been created is worse. And that same passion that drove him to the mistake drives him to the loyalty of his commitment to her and ultimately to the house of Shlomo HaMelech. That's David. He's driven by passion. The same passion can lead the poet in him and the musician in him to write Sefer Tehillim, or at least the bulk of it, and to be the foundation of all our tefillot, and some of the most powerful, poignant Jewish poetry ever written. That's David. That's Gibor Chayil. How does the describe him in this parak? Pasuk Yitchet. V'hinei ra'iti ben li Yishai bet alachmi, yodea nagen. He knows how to play beautiful music. He's a man of great artistry. V'gibor chayil v'ish milchama, and he's a warrior, and he's a man of war. Unavondavar, and he's wise, and he's discerning. V'ishtar, and he's handsome. And God is with him. That's a balance that's extraordinary.
I'm sorry,
That was Pasuk Yitchet. I always keep the parak we're learning in front of me, so I kind of just jump back to it. But it's Parak Tetzayin, Pasuk Yitchet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
16:18. That was the Na'ar's description of David. When the Na'ar made the decision, the suggestion to Shaul that he needs a musician, he comes up with this idea of David, and he says, "I saw amongst the children of Yishai a person, his name is David. What is he? Who is he? Yodan again, he knows how to play. Gibor Chayil, Ish Mechama, he's a warrior, he's a man of war. Navondavar, he's wise. Ishtar, he's beautiful, he's handsome. Alamailas."
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that a little bit last week. Those characteristics are almost mutually exclusive. That's why Goliath couldn't recognize him. Because the Yefei Naim, Ishtar, is almost antithetical to a description of a Gibor Chayil, Ish Mechama, a warrior. But that's what makes David unique. He could be a man of passion, like Esav, a hunter, and he could be a man of beautiful insight, wisdom, poetry, music. Yefei Naim. And that same, that dreamer, if you will, that visionary, to be able to see and to dream and to hope and to anticipate a world in which you could build a mikdash and build a temple and sit in the temple and meditate in the God's presence all day long, which is David's life's ambition. Shifti b'vet Hashem koyimei chayai. Achat she'alti me'et Hashem. Life's ambition. To sit in the sanctuary of God, to meditate in God's presence, that poet in him, that's the musician in him, that's the Yefei Naim in him. It's the same person who's not allowed to build the Beit HaMikdash. Because of the Admoni in him. That's the balance. So that's an introduction to David HaMelech. There is no personality in Tanakh, I believe, there is no personality in Tanakh more complex, more unpredictable, more successful, and with greater failures, all wrapped up into one. You take the total package. Mm. And ultimately, that's the leadership of Israel. Our leaders are not perfect. Go back to Yehuda and Tamar. It's the same Shevet, it's the same line, it's the same identity. Right? Yehuda is the Melech, and Yehuda is the same Yehuda who can be seduced by a Tamar and will admit to his failure and declare, Tzadka Mimeni, she's more righteous than I, and therefore become the progenitor of Malchus, because that's the characteristic that ultimately a Melech needs to have. He needs to have, not that he needs to make the mistakes, but he needs to have the humility to be able to admit when he makes those mistakes and rectify them and correct them. That was the piece that Shaul was missing. Shaul was also a great warrior, and Shaul was also a shepherd, and Shaul was also a man of war, and a man of passion, and a man of that was driven to many things. But Shaul never had the humility to admit when he made a mistake. And so he could never back off of it.
Am I like that? I sinned to you and God.
So we study this parasha of Malach at length. That is a very complex sentence. But it certainly falls far short of what was expected. And it's only after four times when he justifies his actions. I didn't do anything. I listened to the people. The people wanted it. The people with this. The people's fault. It's their fault. I didn't do anything. I did what you asked me to do. Shaul doesn't listen. Shmuel's not listening. That's way too much and way too late. So, way too little and way too late.
That was his fault, though, that he was too humble because he was always worried about the people. So, you know, he's trying to please the people.
Too humble is a, I guess is one way to put it. I'm not sure I would have put it as humble.
What? Insecure?
That'd probably better. But that's a...
But that was his tragic flaw.
Correct. That was his downfall. And David is never... That's the one thing that David was never guilty of. Insecurity. Never accused David of being insecure. But it was also his greatest strength. Because he was willing and able to stand against the tide of everybody in his inner circle, except the Navi, and do the least popular thing. Because he felt, as Navi declared, that it was the right thing to do.
So did his family recognize these traits in him?
At the time, no. I don't think he recognized. I don't think they developed yet. They were describing a... At this point, all I have is that he's a, that he's ruddy with beautiful eyes. Oh, that we don't know. He's described as a na'ar.
Yeah.
So how old is a na'ar? Young. Or youngish, but we don't know how old. He dies at the age of 70, so and he's king for 40 years, so it's certainly youngish. Whether it's late teens or early 20s, we're not sure, but he's it's certainly not long.
He's an adult.
He's marriageable age. By the time he gets to Goliath, he's certainly a marriageable age. How old is he in this story? Depends on the sequencing of events, and that we haven't discussed yet, so... We will adjourn here and Bezrat Hashem continue next week with our introduction to Perek Yud Zayin, story of Goliath.